Welcome to the Unblocking Crypto Podcast. This podcast is not financial advice. It's meant for entertainment purposes only. These are just the opinions of a couple of rambling wrecks.
Welcome back. Episode number 135 of Unblocking Crypto. Hal, holy cow, another week where I feel like there's a lot of craziness going on. Usually it involves the SEC. Good to see you.
Yeah, good to see you, man. I can't wait to get into it.
Yeah. So the first thing that kind of popped out of me this week was the SEC issued OpenSea a Wells notice. And for those of you that don't know who OpenSea is, they are one of the top three largest NFT marketplaces. The CEO has pretty much come out and said he's going to pledge $5 million for legal fees. The rep from North Carolina, Wiley, kind of came out and called this a blatant abuse of power by the SEC. And to me, it's just like, man, does Gensler want the Republicans to win? Is he against trying to get the Democrats a chance at this right now? Because that's what it seems like.
So for me, this one came kind of out of left field. Like I would, if he would have gone after a different organization, like a Cardano or some Monero or something like that, that I would have been able to be like, okay, yeah, I guess it's their turn now that the Ripple case is over. But to go after OpenSea, which sells NFTs, right, and to call NFTs securities, when, I mean, it's difficult to say, like, you can sit at your computer, you can make a JPEG, you can effectively create a letter of authenticity token, let's say, and that bundle of things is a security. That's strange, right? Like I shouldn't be able to create a security in 15 minutes on my laptop. And or so less. At times several million people, you know, for an NFT to be declared a security is going to be a difficult stretch thing to do. And also you're not doing it, like you're doing it not when NFTs were red hot several years ago, not when everything's kind of cooled off, but you understand what NFTs are 1 year ago. You're doing it now when it's like everything's kind of gone through. It would have made more sense if the Ripple case was still open and they weren't sure if they were on the right or wrong side of the legal system and all that. But at this point, if you're the SEC, when do you look in the mirror and you're like, hey, we're probably wrong about this too. What if we just figure out a way to create to lobby Congress to make some legislation that makes sense, and then we can regulate based on that, instead of they're firing another round into the market to see what happens.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like this war on crypto isn't stopping at all from the current administration. And the hope was that with Harris coming on board, she was going to change that and provide this kind of reset towards crypto. And that just doesn't seem to be the case. I mean, it seems to be a mess. And I think there is a couple of guys that sued the SEC to get them to make a declaration on whether NFTs were securities or not. And I don't know if the SEC said, oh, well, if we're going to go do that, we have to go after OpenSea at the same time. But it's just OpenSea. It's not Blur. It's not everybody else. It's right. Now the SEC has gone after the top six American-based crypto companies out there and said, hey, we got a problem with all of you. So it's like, okay, they're saying we don't like innovation in the U.S., especially around the crypto space. We want you guys to get out of here.
Right. And for me, the SEC has a bad track record of winning or being mostly on the winning side of these judicial decisions, which emboldens the open seas of the world to fight them instead of just settling and moving on. So now when the SEC goes after anybody in the crypto world, they're more inclined to like, all right, let's go for 2 or 3 years. Let's go down the Ripple playbook and we'll win this thing, instead of rolling over, you know, taking some of their profits and paying off the SEC. So the SEC's got trouble. You know, they're not pushing people around anymore. People are starting to push back because of those early two or three characters that pushed back, went several years and tens of millions of dollars in the hole on legal fees in order to get some level of victory in the judicial system against the SEC. So yeah, I would imagine that the SEC isn't going to win this, and there's some sort of judicial decision that sets a precedent for NFTs and how they are not securities.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure this is like a 2026 thing that's going to happen at this point, because nothing's going to happen until then. We got the election in the next 6 months, so it's going to be like next 2 months, I guess, at this point. So it's it's going to be, and nobody's going to work until the end of the year at this point in government. So they'll start looking at it next year and then set a trial date for 2026. Then it'll last until 2028. This is kind of stupid.
Yeah. Yeah. There's no reason, if you're in the government, there's no reason to do a lot between now and November. And then from November through January is holiday season, so nothing gets done. So yeah, the government's pretty much wrapped up for the year.
Which is kind of crazy, because there's actually a ton of crypto meetings happening in September. So, and on the 10th, they're meeting to talk about DeFi, which had been postponed from a while ago. On the 18th, they're meeting to talk about, and this is, I think, one of the congressional offices meeting to talk about enforcement and how the SEC has done that, which will be an interesting discussion. And then a few days later, on the 23rd, they're getting the entire five-person committee to testify from the SEC, which has not something that's done very often. So September, I mean, there's a lot of things happening just from a crypto perspective, and that doesn't include all the other economic things that are happening around the corner too.
Yeah, I like that there'll be like effectively a congressional hearing, because C-SPAN effectively videotapes the entire thing and you get to actually watch it. When you're just getting what the algorithm kicks you in social media, you typically just get a few snippets that either support your position or are opposite, so that you get mad and click on stuff. So being able to just throw on YouTube at 1.5x speed and listen to what the people actually say for a while is actually pretty good. So I enjoy that. I don't enjoy that. I prefer spending 20 minutes watching somebody talk for 30 minutes as opposed to spending 30 seconds watching what somebody else wants me to hear about the 30-minute conversation.
Yeah. So speaking of politics, I know we talked last week about Kennedy stepping back. I guess it's officially suspending his campaign. The crazy part is he's been trying to sue states to take his name off the ballot, and it doesn't seem like many of them are doing it. He has been named to Trump's transition team, which is kind of interesting to help decide on who the future is going to be there. But this is, I think, probably not what he was hoping for, is to take his, hopefully get his name off the ballot so that more people will theoretically vote for Trump, since he threw his name behind Trump.
Yeah, several of the states that are not taking his name off the ballot are doing so because they feel like it'll help Kamala. Same states made it very tough for him to put his name on the ballot when they thought it was going to be bad for Joe Biden. So it's just politics.
Yep. So some positive things that I was reading about, I don't know if you looked at what Willy Wu had kind of come out with, and Willy Wu is probably one of the OGs from a Bitcoin proponent, and he broke down how to get to $1 million Bitcoin, which is kind of interesting. I know we've kind of talked a little bit about it in the past, but pretty much the short summary was that $5 trillion has to flow into crypto, which is about 1% of the global wealth. And so far we're at about 620 billion, which is just over 10% of the way there. And I guess the good news is institutions haven't really opened the door yet for the most part. So I think there's a path. It's not going to probably happen in the next couple of months, like people had hoped, or by the end of the year. But now we know what it's going to take.
Yeah, I listened to Willy Wu a lot in the last cycle. I think he really made a push to get on podcasts and get himself out there. And his on-chain analytics stuff is really good. And some of the charts he builds are like fun to look at. You know, like charts are good at showing you what used to happen, but they're not necessarily great about showing you what's going to happen. But I like him, and he's pretty balanced. Like, he sticks to the numbers and doesn't usually inject his own thoughts into them. So he's a pretty good, like, quantifiable researcher, rather than somebody that's just like some of the guys that are like, yeah, it's going to 10 million. And then but there's no numbers there. It's just like they think it. So no, I do like him. 5 trillion of inflows, you know, that's going to take a long time. You know, the ETFs are in the tens of billions. So you're still orders of magnitudes away from that. And it's going to be hard to generate a larger inflow than the ETFs starting off. That's just, it unlocked a ton of money. And so once, you know, once we start rolling in, I still think we're 12, 18 months away from really capturing a lot of the inflows to the ETFs, because these Wells Fargo's and Bank of America's of the world need to approve things and jump in, and kind of need a hyperbolic bull run to really get on people's radar and have people pick up the phone and tell their financial advisors to get them exposure to Bitcoin. So I would imagine we're still going to ramp up and do all of that stuff. But I, you know, $5 trillion flowing into Bitcoin is going to take a long, long, long time. So it's fine with me. I mean, that's, if it goes to $1 million per Bitcoin in a very short time, then I think we've had a real breakdown in how money works and society's crumbling. Like, I mean, you would have a big problem if Bitcoin sucked up that much liquidity that fast. So yeah, it's, you know, 10 years out, something like that is probably kind of where I'd peg it.
Yeah. And speaking of the ETFs, BlackRock had a negative day for the second time since its inception. I think the last one was in May. So they had like $13 million of net outflows, which people were kind of not happy about. But this is literally 2 days out of, what, 7 months? It's not all as bad as it's cracked up to be. Any other ETF that's had that much success would be probably getting a lot more attention than this.
Yeah, no, that doesn't bother me. I mean, people buy and sell and take profits and quarterly rebalance, and there's a million different reasons why ETFs are sold that have nothing to do with sentiment or the if Bitcoin is going to go to zero, right? Like, I don't think that that's not a real there's not a lot of signal there. It's just another little data point kind of thing.
And NASDAQ just submitted their plan for the ability to trade Bitcoin options. So they followed New York Stock Exchange that did this earlier this year. Now, shocker is we have to wait on the SEC to actually approve something. So no telling how long that'll take.
Yeah. So I am going to start doing covered calls when the options come for the ETFs in my retirement accounts, because I'm like, I can just generate more cash through a covered call and then reinvest it in the underlying Bitcoin ETF. And if the Bitcoin price runs enough that I am forced to sell, I don't have to pay capital gains taxes or anything because they're inside of a Roth or a IRA, and I'll buy them back and maybe I miss out a little bit. But you would be killing it right now in the last 6-7 months if you had a covered call strategy on the Bitcoin ETF. So yeah, I welcome the options. Also, it allows people to play games without like the futures contracts that keep the price held down or propped up in these choppy times where they just kind of collect that drag on the spot price.
Yeah, very true. So let's talk a little bit about what's going on around the world. I know there's not a ton new from El Salvador, although I was reading a little bit about Bukele and him coming out and saying that Bitcoin has brought a ton of branding, investments, and tourism to El Salvador, but it's still not widespread adoption. So, I mean, as much as you and I would like for Bitcoin to kind of take off, for somebody like El Salvador that did everything right and tried to get the entire country to adopt Bitcoin, it's still not taking off. So around the world, I think we're still a long ways away before we get to true widespread adoption for Bitcoin. So my point is, it's still early.
Oh yeah, that was one of the takeaways for me from my trip to El Salvador was, in El Zante, it worked great. We used the Lightning at work. People would be on one Lightning wallet, I'd be on a different Lightning wallet. They couldn't believe that I was using the Strike wallet for Lightning because of whatever reasons. Like, I'm in the United States, so I don't have access to all the different wallets that they do. They all interoperated perfectly. Everything transacted quickly. If you value Bitcoin, then it would be a preferable way to transact. And then outside of El Zante, it was very spotty. Like, hey, you got to go talk to that person. That person over there knows how to do it. Oh, it's on the other cash register. We don't, you know, nobody's working it. So there was a lot of times I'd ask if I could just pay in Bitcoin, and it was like, Technically, yes, you can, but not right now. like it just didn't work. So yeah, the mass adoption is definitely not there. I'd say it was a low double-digit percentage of people that were kind of into it. Now, the awareness, I would say, was very high, but the adoption was not what I would have thought it would be after 3 years. But all that said, I mean, if you're scraping by, you don't have really time to think about Bitcoin and savings, and you can't really ride the ups and downs. Like, it's tough to take risk if you don't have any money at the end of the month. You know, it's easy to take risk if you just kind of have some money sitting on the side that's not doing much, and you're like, you know what, I need to take a little bit of that and see if I can't beat inflation or this and that, or even if you don't even understand inflation. If you have a couple thousand dollars sitting, and then 2 years later it's still sitting, you're like, yeah, okay, fine, I'll make a move. But if you don't have that, and then you're in trouble. And you know, in the United States, like 56% of people can't get their hands on $1,000 if they needed to in an emergency. So, and El Salvador, it's more than 56%, right? So, yeah, to me, you know, to me, Bitcoin it's got a place. I don't know that in El Salvador it's the same place right now that it is in the United States.
Yeah, it's interesting. So like in Argentina, apparently even the regulators are realizing that this technology is here to stay, and they are starting to become really friendly with the crypto movement that's happening throughout Argentina called Crecimiento, with all the little pop-up cities. So, I mean, I think more and more people are realizing it, but you got a great point that for most of those countries, there's not a lot of extra savings that anybody can put this into. If they can use it for day to day, then that's great. But I mean, when you're living less than paycheck to paycheck and there's some flux, some volatility in Bitcoin, maybe that's not the best place to be.
Yeah. And I think that when you go back tying the Willy Woo $1 million Bitcoin requiring $5 trillion in inflows, you really need the sovereign wealth funds to get involved. You're not going to, if countries do start to adopt Bitcoin and people in those countries start to move into it, I think that's great. But if that's a real slow burn to get to $5 trillion in inflows. On the flip side, you get there a lot quicker as large institutions and government sovereign wealth funds start to add funds into it. So yeah, I think Bitcoin's good for countries that are struggling and developing. And I think it's good for the middle class, and I think it's good for the upper crust. So I just think when you open the doors to the top end players, the funds flow is huge and quick. You open it up country by country, and the funds flow takes a long time from just normal people across the socio-demographic, you know, spectrum.
Well, you got places like Nigeria. I know last week we talked about that they thought some regulation or approvals for some exchanges were coming sooner than later. Well, they already approved 2 exchanges in principle, and 5 more are put in the regulatory incubation program so that people can utilize crypto throughout the country. There's some kind of caveats to a lot of that. I mean, they pretty much come out and said, if you don't have a license from Nigeria, then you are operating illegally, and that beware of your citizens to use that. I think it almost seems like they're trying to get away from a lot of the cryptos, and they want to do more of the CDBC type stuff. So it is kind of a mess. And then I guess the other thing from Nigeria too, I've been talking about the US citizen, the Binance exec that's been held over there. His trial was originally supposed to be October 11th. It just got pulled into yesterday because he is struggling to walk. So, and they won't give him a wheelchair. He has like a herniated disc. So they gave him some crutches to walk into the room yesterday. But they said that this is something he's been living with for 12 years. So it shouldn't matter. He shouldn't be getting bail to go get medical treatment, even though every other place can deal with whatever his medication there needs to be for a herniated disc. Nigeria doesn't have any of the supplies or anything to do that. So it's still kind of a mess there. I don't know what's actually going to happen. I haven't seen too much other than I think the bail was denied.
Yeah, the only thing I saw was a video of him trying to walk across, I think, the courtroom or courthouse in the hallway. And there's a guard that's like, "You can walk, come on." And he's like, he's got one crutch, like Tiny Tim. And I mean, you know, could he be faking that he can't walk? Yeah, I guess so. But he looked like he was struggling pretty bad. So, yeah, I mean, you know, countries really can't do this. Normally, the home country will make some phone calls, make some things happen, and, you know, the WNBA player will get released from Russia. But it hadn't happened for the Binance exec yet.
Which is crazy. His home country is the U.S., by the way.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know why we're not making a push for that. I mean, it feels like it's not like a political prisoner. I don't think that there's politics in this, but it feels like, you know, it's an economic prisoner. Like it's just, you know, an anti-crypto Nigerian position has kind of resulted in this.
Yeah. We talked pretty recently, too, about Russia and using crypto to do some cross-border payments. It sounds like that just got approved by Putin. So they're going to trial that here pretty soon. Of course, the goal is they need to evade a bunch of U.S. sanctions that got put on them. What's crazy about all this is Russia has still banned the use of crypto as legal tender within Russia. So they can do it as a country, but you can't do it as an individual there.
Yeah, I mean, that's how governments work. Like, I think this will work. I think it'll be good for me, but y'all don't use it because if you use it, it might be bad for me. If I use it, it might be good for me.
So we haven't talked a lot about Bitcoin ATMs, but I was reading a bunch of news here recently. Australia back in 22 had about 73 Bitcoin ATMs. They have jumped to 1,160. So they are now the number three largest Bitcoin ATMs behind the U.S. and Canada. They got a while to catch the U.S. because the U.S. has about 31,000. So they're a little ways behind. But, I mean, that's kind of a big deal, especially considering how much Australia has been kind of fighting some of the crypto stuff in the background, too. They're going through a lot of their regulation phase these days, Tim.
If the United States has 31,000 Bitcoin ATMs, then my small town of 30,000 people has an over allocation of Bitcoin ATMs, because I know we have, I'm aware of three without looking or trying. So I'd be willing to bet that the number of Bitcoin ATMs is higher than that.
Well, the UK banned their Bitcoin ATMs back in 22. They had 81, which put them kind of high up on the list in the top 10. They have just charged the first person with operating a crypto ATM in the UK. So I'm not sure what's going to happen to him, but apparently they are serious about it.
Yeah, I mean, they seem like they're not afraid to just arrest people for things that seem like you shouldn't get arrested for these days. Like, it's been pretty strange.
Mm-hmm. Was it the exchange over in India just came out and said customers should expect 55 to 57% of their money back. And they're asking for 6 months to restructure all their liabilities. So we've talked about it before. Be careful about keeping your money on exchanges. And that's where most of the hacks in the history of crypto have come from. And that's where you get most of your losses from.
Yeah, I think if you have a very small amount of crypto or Bitcoin and it's sitting on an ETF, that's one thing. But if you start to kind of stack in dollar cost average and you're building a pretty good, you know, portfolio or a stash of Bitcoin, you're enough to protect it, or where you'd be pretty bummed if it disappeared. You really need to look at getting it off of exchanges, getting onto a wallet. Like, it's just too common. And Coinbase especially is just such a honeypot for bad actors to go target, because they're sitting on millions of Bitcoin. That would make me nervous, even though, yeah, they're the biggest and they're old enough and they're crypto, you know, friendly and smart enough to kind of play defense a lot. These like hacker types seem to always find a way in.
Well, Coinbase has been hacked at least twice already, so if not more than that.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like they're a voting machine.
has said they can come out and challenge the FTX creditors, the group giving the money back to all the creditors. They have talked about providing the money back in stable coins, and the SEC said they don't like that. So for those of you that don't remember what FTX was going to give, they were going to give 118% of the money that you lost based on the day when it went under, which Bitcoin is like more than 4x'd from that point. But that was as long as you had less than $50,000 to claim. So if you had more than $50,000, then it was different. But it continues to be a mess, and the SEC continues to kind of throw their weight around and say, we're going to possibly challenge this unless you only do cash.
Well, if they keep screwing around, people are going to be more mad, because 6 months from now, there's be a high probability that all of the crypto assets are worth even more. And if you don't at least get your 25% payout now and get back in, you're going to be at 12.5% if Bitcoin doubles from here. I mean, the time value of Bitcoin is pretty substantial. And if they're holding your funds, that would be frustrating.
You mentioned Cardano earlier too. They had some pretty major news. They just had their Chang hard fork, which the main thing behind that is it gives governance completely to the community. So their main company, IOG, does not hold any more of the Genesis keys. So now Cardano is completely community governed, and they'll vote for, I think, a board, and that board will make proposals and then the community will vote for it. So kind of a big deal for Cardano. It's been a long time coming, and good for them for getting it done.
I mean, the Cardano price seems to be kind of chilling under like the 30 cent range. I think of them in the good times as being around $1. And everything seems to have their legs cut out from underneath them. You know, even Ethereum and Solana are pretty well below their highs. So, you know, it seems like it's hanging in there without looking at charts.
I think they're struggling like everybody else, but we'll see what happens when things change. So I know we've talked about this in the past, but I saw the Telegram CEO. One of the things he was accused of by France was providing encrypted services without embedding controls. And I read that and I was like, you've got to be kidding me. What do you think the point of encrypted services are? Why are we not allowed to have free speech? So it's another thing, kind of a black mark on France right now for whatever they're doing, and just a big question mark on what the hell is happening right now with this war on free speech these days. But Nostr did see like a 5x increase in downloads after all of this is happening, because people are realizing they want to get to something else that is more privacy centric. And in reality, Telegram isn't very privacy centric. So Signal is privacy centric. Telegram is more of like a social media app. So it's kind of a mess right now with all that going on.
Yeah, it's strange that there's no law that says you have to create backdoors if you create platforms on the internet. But if you create a platform on the internet that doesn't have backdoors, then you get arrested.
Weird. I feel like I've heard this before. Regulation by enforcement. This is becoming a theme. Everybody keeps following this.
Yeah. Well, when democracy doesn't give the government what it wants, then authoritarianism pops up and raises its head in different spots.
The other thing that is related to this, Brazil decided to block Twitter/X in their country, because they're saying that they don't like the misinformation that is being spread. And they were also saying that if you use a VPN to access it, it can cost you 50,000 reals. Is that their currency? Which is equivalent to about $8,900. So that's kind of interesting that another country doesn't like free speech. And what I've seen so far is there's a bunch of companies out there and VCs that are saying Brazil doing this is kind of making it turn into the next China, that no one wants to invest in China anymore. No one's going to want to invest in Brazil. And Brazil's been getting a ton of investment and a ton of focus from a crypto. I mean, they've been one of the leaders in crypto, at least in South America.
Yeah, I think Elon Musk has been nice and vocal about this one. And some of the stuff he said is like, yeah, well, we were doing some things that we weren't supposed to talk about, and we never talked about them. And now you're talking about talking about them, and you're telling us people are going to get arrested for using our platform. It's like we're trying to play the game up to a point that we can tolerate, and now you're doing this. But I did see that there were a lot of people setting their VPNs to Brazil in order to just route more traffic, more Twitter traffic through the servers in Brazil to just kind of mess with stuff. You know, again, man, it's like, yeah, it's all fun and games until the government feels like some power is slipping. And then it doesn't matter if there's laws, we're just going to do stuff. And then it'll take months or years in order for the pushback to matter. And, you know, we've been doing it in the United States, like when there were mortgage and rent underpayment suspensions, like there were no evictions, and the White House pushed it through like the EPA, I think. And 6 months later, the Supreme Court was like, yeah, no, you don't have the power to do this. This feels the same way. Like at some point, Brazil is going to say, hey, look, this isn't really, you can't just make stuff up. But, you know, if you scare people, then a lot of them will just stop doing it and you get what you want. And instead of, you know, Twitter giving people information on an open basis, they're going to go back to having like government controlled news or government and media collaboration controlled news.
So. Yeah, I mean, it definitely seems like freedom in general is under attack right now in a lot of different areas. So hopefully the rest of the world wakes up and doesn't allow this to happen.
Yeah, COVID seemed to accelerate a lot of things, and governments taking away freedom seems to be one of the things that it really accelerated.
And everybody's okay with it, unfortunately, right now.
There's a lot of people that are just like, oh, well, this is just the way it is.
Yeah. So NFTs, we haven't really talked about NFTs much lately, but there's been some interesting news there. I know Trump just released his fourth NFT collection. So he raised about $2 million, which is not too shabby. I think it was just over 20,000 of the cards that he sold, although he has it set for like 360,000. So it's a very small percentage. He keeps bumping it up. It started at like 10 or 20,000 on his first couple of collections, and then he's bumped them up to higher numbers each time, and they're not selling out, but still $2 million. I mean, at $99 a card, that's pretty good. The catch to all of these NFTs is they cannot be traded until after January 31st of 2025. So
it'll either be worth something or they won't be, like all other NFTs.
Yeah. Oh, I think like with these, you have the possibility of going to some sort of dinner with him or getting a piece of the suit that he wore when he got shot or something like that. So it's like all kinds of crazy stuff.
Yeah, all right. I don't know much. I knew that there was some rumors about what he was going to do with crypto and NFTs. So, yeah, I don't know. NFTs are still out there for me, man.
Well, the other one that's kind of interesting, and it's related to Coinbase. So Coinbase and Liquid Death have a kind of a partnership right now, which Coinbase won a 500,000 eBay auction to be able to get the billboard rights to like 500,000 boxes of Liquid Death. And so on each box, you'll have the ability to go mint a NFT that could be free to maybe a couple of dollars. And this will all be done on Coinbase's base network. So kind of interesting. I mean, that's 500,000 people to bring on to Coinbase / into the NFT space. I'll be interested to see what actually comes of this, but I wonder also, is this something that turns into more companies doing this? Because apparently, I think Coinbase just barely beat Dude Wipes for the ability to mint these NFTs, or have this space, I should say, I guess, on those boards in the boxes. So kind of interesting.
I mean, just from a business standpoint, man, that's pretty smart, because whoever won the ability to put their marketing on those boxes, they're marketing directly to 500,000 people that have enough money to spend $14 on a 12 pack of water. So, you know, you've got people that have discretionary income and that they can play with money, man. Like that's a pretty smart move. So yeah, it's a good place to start. And that's not a ton of money for a company like Coinbase in order to do something like that. And it would be super easy to track. You know, it's not like if you let it go on the internet and it gets copy and pasted, you know, a QR code that goes around, you don't know how many people found it or how they got to it or any of that. But it was on a cardboard box. And I mean, honestly, if you did it right, you could tell what state it was in and things like that. So, you know, it seems smart. Maybe it will be smart. Maybe it won't be. Just give it a shot. It seems like a low investment.
Well, I know Coinbase had tried to get their NFT marketplace up and running. Maybe this is one of the ways to help jumpstart that. Their DEX, decentralized exchange that they have, has, I think, had some of the highest volumes out of any DEX out there lately. So at least on the Ethereum L2 side. So yeah, good for them. Smart thinking. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, we'll see how it goes, man. There's a lot of this stuff is see how it goes in crypto world. Like, today's news is more like the seeds of what might be bearing fruit, you know, years from now.
Well, what else did I miss that you wanted to talk about?
Just on a more of a macroeconomic scale, I saw a chart where the savings rate is down to a record low for people. So inflation's starting to really take up. People are spending a lot of their money on things they have to spend money on. They're just not saving. They don't have the money at the end of the week, month, in order to save money. So that's trouble. And not surprisingly, credit card debt is at a record high for the same reason. So, you know, if you're looking at headwinds for the Bitcoin price and appreciation and things like that, this recession that we're not in is a pretty solid headwind to keep retail money out of the market. I think eventually they'll realize that we're in it, but until we're actually telling the truth about the numbers in the market and what inflation actually is and what unemployment actually is and things like that, I don't think we'll be able to declare it a recession. But for us to be in this situation, and Bitcoin price has been bouncing around between 50 and 70,000 all year, that's still not a bad place to be for Bitcoin price.
It is.
The another thing I saw, artificial intelligence agents have transacted in crypto back and forth. So Coinbase, Brian Armstrong had some quotes about this, and it just made a lot of sense. Again, you know, this is like the first transaction between two AI agents in crypto. But man, if you're an AI agent, you're not going to, you can't get a bank account or a credit card anyway. So you're going to want to transact in crypto, but it settles instantly and you could prove that it's settled. So if you were two unemotional entities that haven't been around and haven't been, you know, soaking in the US dollar world like everybody else has been, you'd be like, yeah, we don't need to use US dollars. Just use these tokens and we'll keep track of it this way on a public ledger. And if we have to go back and look at it, we can go back and look at it. So I was like, yeah, okay, this backs my thesis that Bitcoin and crypto have a real strong future. So that was probably worth enough of my attention that I actually read through the article instead of just kind of taking note that it happened. So I was like, that's kind of an interesting thing to have two AI agents communicate and transact and exchange value, right? That's kind of a next layer for AI.
Oh yeah, I think it's the beginning of something big. If AI wasn't big already, it's about to become even bigger for sure.
And then just, you know, I like to throw in like these things that I experience that kind of tie into crypto and Bitcoin. So I took my son and three of his buddies to a football game this weekend. So, you know, we're kind of in a parking lot throwing the football. I grabbed some Lunchables, like kids like to eat processed food, and Gatorades and stuff like that. Well, there's a QR code on the Lunchables box for the Transformers movie thing. So my son's like, oh, scan this. Da, da, da. We go to the football game multiple times. There's a QR code on the Jumbotron to sign up for, you know, a young fans membership for the team, and sign up for or submit your pictures. You know, instead of sending them on social media, then you put them through their program. So I would assume so they can screen them for decency and stuff like that before they post them on their social media. But my like three different times in one day, you know, these kids are like, oh, scan that. Oh, what's that? And so long story short, 5 years from now, these kids will be 17, 18 and scanning a QR code in order to transact in Bitcoin or crypto is going to be so ordinary for them that it will not be the same as it is for like people like me and you find it neat. People that are our parents' age find it to be scary. And people that are our kids' age are, it's going to be handing cash to a cashier is going to feel weird. Scanning a QR code is going to feel very normal. So, you know, the psychological side of transitioning into more of a Bitcoin and crypto based transaction society, I think it's coming our way. And it's kind of the infrastructure is getting laid in the software for people. And so I think it's just a matter of time before people value it. I mean, like my kids value Bitcoin. So there's more kids that do too. And all you need is people to understand the value and have the ability to transact. And then you get a medium of exchange. So, you know, we're a ways away from that, but I don't think we're two generations away from it. But I think we're something around one generation away from it.
It's already painful for me to use cash or checks to do anything, right? So yeah, I guess I'm there already, but yeah, I don't think we're far off from the rest of the world being that way already too.
Oh, sat down and talked to my accountant because we were complaining about the post office service because we were talking about submitting documents and this and that. You know, I prefer to do it digitally. And he was like, just don't put it in the post office. Like I'll meet you or you can drop it at the office, but don't mail it because things are taking a month to go across town. And so if you write a check, you not only have the 3 to 5 days for it to settle when the bank receives it and scans it. If you mail a check, it may take you a month or 6 weeks for that value to actually transfer from one person to the other. Like you want to talk about ready for disruption, man. The check writing industry is, I mean, it's got to be a zombie, and people just haven't adopted crypto yet. So yeah, I'm done with it, man. Writing checks is crazy. I still like handing people cash because it still hurts a little bit. When I give somebody a 20 and they give me back fives and ones, I'm like, God, I just keep the 20, man. These fives and ones are going to disappear anyway. So that's just the way I feel about it.
Awesome. Well, cool. Well, as always, great catching up. We'll see what the next week has to bring for us in the crypto sphere.
All right. Sounds good, Jason. Thanks.
See ya.
If all of these crypto conversations leave you with more questions and you're looking for answers, I've created a product that dives into most of those answers, including why crypto, how to set up a cold wallet, and some of the more advanced strategies for dealing with crypto. Check the link in the notes below and hope to see you there.